Podcorn are revolutionising podcast sponsorships and connecting unique voices to unique brands. There was a time when only the big popular podcasts received sponsorships, but with Podcorn, indie podcasts like Morbidology are able to work with amazing brands on their podcast. Podcorn have even sponsored this episode. Podcorn takes the stress and confusion out of finding sponsorships for your podcast or finding a podcast to sponsor your brand. It is a simple and straightforward way for brands and podcasters to connect, no matter how small your podcast or how small your brand. Podcorn is truly simplifying every aspect of podcast sponsorships. All you need to do is sign up for free and begin browsing Podcorn's marketplace. The marketplace is easy to use and even has a handy calendar to take the stress out of booking multiple sponsors. One of the best things about Podcorn is that you have complete control over your spend as a brand or your price as a podcaster. Podcorn is a revolutionary way to connect podcasters to sponsorship opportunities, including host-read ads, interview segments, topical discussions, and more. So click the link in my show notes to sign up to Podcorn today. Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. For parents, their child moving overseas can be one of the most daunting moments of their life. On one hand, they want to give their child the freedom to determine their own fate, but on the other hand, it can be a very scary experience, knowing that your child is so far away from home. However, that apprehension is nothing compared to the fear a parent feels when their child disappears while in another country. On Saturday, the 10th of June 2017, University of Illinois police were alerted of a missing person by an associate professor. According to friends of 26-year-old Ying Ying Zhong, they hadn't seen her or heard from her since around 1:30 p.m. on the Friday. Her friends had made numerous attempts to call her mobile but were unsuccessful in connecting with her. They had even checked the local hospitals, but Ying Ying wasn't there. Quote, "We've exhausted all our options, so we are asking the public for help. We're not ruling anything out," end quote, said her friend Chuck Gao. Ying Ying was a visiting scholar from mainland China. She had only been in the community for around a month and had been living in a one-bedroom apartment at the Orchard Downs complex in Urbana. Her research focused on photosynthesis and crop productivity. Ying Ying had the opportunity to study at other universities, but she had set her sights on the University of Illinois because of its prominent reputation in the field of agriculture. Furthermore, the University of Illinois had the largest Chinese student population of any U.S. college. At the time, 5,600 Chinese students were enrolled at the university. Before coming to Illinois, Ying Ying had worked as a research assistant at the Institute of Botany at the Chinese Academy of Sciences in Beijing. She had received her master's degree in environmental engineering from Peking University in 2016 and had a bachelor's degree from Sun Yat-sen University in 2013. Ying Ying had come to America in the hopes that she could become a university professor and be able to help support her family back in China. She was dedicated and known for her kind heart, and her friends and family knew that she would make the perfect teacher. Not only was Ying Ying especially excited about expanding her research, but she was looking forward to gaining experience internationally and expanding her worldview. When she came to the United States, Other than going to a conference in Holland, it was the first time that she had ever travelled abroad. Yingying came from an extremely hard-working family in Nanping, a small city in the Fujian province in southeast China. Her mother was a stay-at-home mother while her father worked as a factory driver. While Yingying's parents were more than ecstatic for her, they still worried about her being so far away from home. It wasn't like Yingying would be a short flight away, either. A direct flight from Nanping to Illinois was on average 13.5 hours long and cost around $1,000. Nevertheless, they wanted Yingying to make her own decisions in life and were proud of how successful she had become. Quote, "She is a very nice, very kind girl, and she gets along with everybody very well. She has been very outstanding in academics since she was young and has always served as a leader of her class," said her father, Rong Gaozhong. The family stayed in contact on WeChat, a popular messaging and social media platform in China. Aside from her studies, Yingying loved playing the guitar, and she was the lead singer in her band, Cute Horse, during her time in college in China. One of her favorite songs was The Rose by Bette Midler.
She travels, she did voluntary work. Yingying loves singing, and she and a few friends, they formed a pop group called Cute Horse, and she was the lead singer in that group. Before she came to the U.S., her friends celebrating Yingying's birthday, and that party also became a farewell party before her journey to the U.S.
On the day that Yingying was last seen, she was at Turner Hall, where she conducted her research between 8:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. She then went back to her apartment for lunch. Shortly thereafter, she left the apartment and headed towards the One North apartment complex on North Lincoln Avenue in Urbana to sign the lease for her new apartment. She had texted the apartment manager at 1:30 p.m. to say that she was running a bit late. However, Yingying never showed up. A mass email was sent around to all students by the University of Illinois Police asking everybody to keep an eye out for Yingying. It read in part, quote, "We will issue updates via social media and email if there are any significant developments in our search. Our campus community is stronger when we look out for each other, and we thank you in advance for your assistance," end quote. Quickly enough, local news picked up on the story, including the News Gazette.
The next day, Saturday, June the 10th, I was working here in the newsroom, and the phone rang, and it was a male friend of Yingying's, and he told me, "We have this missing international student." And I have to admit, I kind of rolled my eyes. As a crime reporter, we get missing persons reports quite a bit. But there was something about the way these people were conveying, "We think something's wrong," that made me say, okay, it won't hurt if we run a short story saying that the police are looking for her.
A search party was assembled while police attempted to trace Yingying's last known movements. They encouraged any businesses in the area to review their CCTV footage to see if any cameras picked up Yingying. It was uncovered that Yingying had boarded a Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District Tail Line bus at 1:35 p.m. at the South Shelter at the Orchard Downs Complex. She got off the bus at 1:52 p.m. at Springfield and Matthews Avenues. Next, she was seen attempting to flag down another Mass Transit District bus, but it passed her without stopping. Unbeknown to Yingying, it was a limited lane bus and most likely didn't stop because Yingying was standing on the wrong side of the street.
Our officers initially went there. Her apartment was in normal condition, so yeah, she didn't pack up her clothes. And she didn't have a car, so I assumed that she took a bus. So I basically checked with MTD buses in town here to see if she had got on a bus.
Yingying then walked north to the intersection of North Goodwin Avenue and West Clark Street, where she stood by another bus stop. However, this particular bus stop was designated for the Illinois Limited weekday daytime route, which only runs during university breaks and summer sessions. Minutes later, a CCTV camera overlooking the B4 parking garage showed a black Saturn Astra pull up alongside Yingying as she stood at the bus stop. Yingying chatted to the driver for a couple of minutes before entering the car and continuing north on Goodwin Avenue. Next, we will hear from Samantha Boyle, a reporter for the Daily Illinois.
It was a pretty eerie video to watch. As soon as the car drives up, basically, and stops right by Yingying, I'm just thinking, like, don't don't get in the car, don't get in the car. But then you see that she walks up to it. She opened the passenger side door and got in, it shut, and then just drove right off the camera.
Following this lead, police began to investigate whether Yingying had used a ride-hailing service, such as Uber. Quote, "That's something we're pursuing. There's a thousand different scenarios that could have played out here. We have a lot more work to do before we can say what it was and what it wasn't," end quote, said University of Illinois police spokesman Patrick Wade. They subsequently released information about the black Saturn Astra. Unfortunately, the CCTV wasn't able to pick up the registration plate, nor did it capture the driver's face. The FBI would eventually be called in to assist in the search for Yingying. Other than the black Saturn Astra, no tips had come to light. The FBI soon announced that they were investigating the disappearance of Yingying as a kidnapping. While investigators were attempting to uncover whether Yingying had used a ride-hailing service, another student reported that a man in a black vehicle, wearing sunglasses, had asked her to get into his car, claiming that he was an undercover cop. The incident had disturbed the woman so much that she had shared a warning on Facebook just around an hour before Yingying climbed into a black car.
Do you remember, like, hearing anything? Police will have a police, you'll hear, like, a scanner or a radio.
No radio. What if you saw a picture of him? Would you be able to say that was him?
Because of the sunglasses, it would be tough.
Investigators encouraged businesses once again to review their CCTV footage, as well as drivers with dash cams. They were wanting to see if they could spot the black vehicle in the area and try to uncover where he drove Yingying. They would soon uncover that the black vehicle had circled the streets of the city before stopping alongside Yingying. The man driving the vehicle was described as a white man, and before stopping beside Yingying, he appeared to be driving around aimlessly, or on the other hand, driving around searching for a victim. As the search was underway, the Chinese Consulate General in Chicago had been in contact with Yingying's parents in China and had been helping them to get an emergency visa to come to the United States. Yingying's boyfriend, Xiaoling Hao, was working around the clock to bring awareness to Yingying's disappearance while he was in China, where he was attending school. Quote, "I wish the search process in the US could be faster. Everything is moving too slow," end quote, he said. Xiaoling and Yingying had met around 8 years ago while studying in the Peking University.
On one hand, I think Yingying will be found soon because it will be not difficult for them to locate the car and locate Yingying.
Days later, the FBI announced that they were offering a $10,000 reward to help find Yingying. In addition, they installed several digital billboards with information about Yingying's disappearance. By this point, Yingying's father, Rong Gao, her boyfriend, Xiaoling, and her aunt, Li Qin, had flown in from China and were meeting with the investigators working on the case. It was the first time that her aunt and father had ever been in the United States. They were housed by the University of Illinois and were taken care of by the wider Chinese community, who made sure they were well fed and well cared for. Meanwhile, hundreds of volunteers at the Chinese Students and Scholars Association were working around the clock to bring awareness to Yingying's disappearance. One local advertising student, Zink Yong, said that he and around 500 other Chinese students had been communicating on WeChat and sharing information about Yingying and her disappearance. In addition, they also set up a Facebook page and were handing out missing person flyers throughout the area. A lot of Yingying's friends said that she was exceptionally careful. The thought that she would have just climbed into a stranger's car, unless, of course, it was a ride-hailing service, was just unbelievable to her friends. Furthermore, Yingying didn't have a large circle of friends. Since she had only been in the country for around a month, she didn't yet have the chance to fully immerse herself within the community. She had a few friends and wasn't yet familiar with the university or the surrounding area. By the end of the first week, investigators had received hundreds of tips. Quote, "We've gotten so many that we have to prioritise which one is going to be most likely to be valuable information. We follow up on those first, but we do look at everything and we're continuing to follow up on those," end quote, said police spokesman Patrick Wade. Shortly thereafter, the university and the Champaign County Crime Stoppers announced that there was now an additional $40,000 reward for information that could lead to Yingying. Almost 2 weeks passed with no new information as to what happened to Ying Ying. Her father made an emotional plea on television for the safe return of his daughter through a translator. Quote, Ying, be strong. Dad is waiting for you here. I hope that being a good person, you will be safe forever. End quote. The FBI soon announced that the search for Ying Ying and her alleged abductor had become a priority for them nationally. Updates on the case were being sent a minimum of 2 times per day to the office of the acting director of the FBI in Washington, D.C., and were being reported regularly to all 56 FBI field offices around the country. While they had remained tight-lipped about the investigation, which is common in some cases, they confessed that they had made progress. Towards the end of June, it was announced that the Black Saturn Astra involved in the suspected kidnapping had been located. In a statement, the FBI said that they had received numerous leads in regards to the car and said they didn't need any further information. However, they refused to elaborate any further. Meanwhile, University of Illinois students and others from the wider community gathered at the Urbana-Champaign campus to show their support for Ying Ying. They met at the Krannert Center and walked to the bus stop near where Ying Ying was last seen. The purpose of the gathering and march was to keep Ying Ying's disappearance at the forefront of everyone's minds. Quote, I'm a student from China just like her, and we come all the way here to pursue our dreams. One of our fellow friends is missing, and it's like one of us is missing, end quote, said Yai Fangping. Just the following day, it was announced that a suspect had been arrested in connection with the kidnapping of Ying Ying. Tragically, the FBI also announced that they believed that Ying Ying was dead. The suspect was subsequently identified as 27-year-old Brent Christensen from Champaign. In the same statement, it was revealed that Brent had been under surveillance after he was identified as the driver of the Black Saturn Astra. While under surveillance, Brent was overheard telling somebody that he had kidnapped Ying Ying. Following the crushing update, University of Illinois Chancellor Robert Jones released a statement which read, quote, The entire campus community is saddened by the news and our hearts are with the family of Ying Ying Zhong tonight. This is a senseless and devastating loss of a promising young woman and a member of our community. There is nothing we can do to ease the sadness or grief for her family and friends, but we can and we will come together to support them in any way we can in these difficult days ahead, end quote. Brent was a University of Illinois physics grad student who had earned his master's degree in physics in May. He arrived at the University of Illinois in August of 2013 following 4 years at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. It was while at the University of Wisconsin-Madison that Brent served as a research assistant in Switzerland, where he analyzed data created at the Large Hadron Collider, the world's largest and most powerful particle collider. Brent had also worked as a teaching assistant for several introductory physics courses for 4 semesters, and had also worked as a research assistant during other semesters. While working as a teaching assistant, Brent taught small group sections of larger lecture courses for physics majors and non-majors. He was in an open marriage, and at the time of Ying Ying's disappearance, his wife was out of town. As it turned out, investigators had turned their attention to Brent just 3 days after Ying Ying disappeared. On the 12th of June, they had located the Black Saturn Astra in the 2500 block of West Springfield Avenue. The car, who had picked Ying Ying up, was distinct because it had both a sunroof and a cracked front passenger hubcap. When the car was identified as belonging to Brent, he was questioned immediately.
So they came, they were just checking out all of the Saturn Astras in the area. Mm-hmm. I know it's a pretty rare car, so probably a short list. He asked where my wife and I were during, I think it was 2 to 3 on Friday. And I mean, I graduated a couple weeks ago, so I'm looking for jobs right now. So, okay. I mean, I was either playing video games on my computer or taking an afternoon nap. So I was unable to produce an alibi. I looked into certain things to try and see if I could get some kind of info for an alibi. I sent some texts around that time, but none exactly between 2 and 3. I let them come in the apartments. They searched for stuff. I let them come in the car. They searched for stuff there. That was pretty much it.
Okay.
10 minutes, 15 minutes. Give them my info.
What'd you graduate in?
Master's in physics.
In physics?
Yes.
Wow, that's way smarter than me.
Thanks.
I'm assuming that's over at the U of I there?
Yes.
Okay. You said your wife was out of town.
Yes.
The guys mentioned something about Wisconsin.
Correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. You guys are originally from there? Or is
yes.
That, okay. Do you know what days she was in Wisconsin?
Like late Thursday night, early Friday morning until Sunday evening.
Brent told investigators that he couldn't recollect where he was at the time that Yingying was last seen. He said that he may have been sleeping or playing video games at his home, but he couldn't be sure.
Do you have any questions for me before...
Why am I under suspicion? Is it just my car, or is there anything else?
That's, you know, a large portion. It is a very unique car. Like I said, our search warrant is just for the car.
Yeah.
So we can,
yeah,
you know, look into it. We can,
of course,
see what we can find. And, of course, you could also turn around and exonerate you completely. I mean, we're talking about a very rare car.
Yeah.
So,
On the 14th of June, investigators obtained a search warrant for Brent's car and ordered him to come in for further questioning. When presented with the CCTV evidence, Brent quickly changed his story and admitted to picking up an Asian woman.
Look, you know that we didn't bring you all the way up here to talk about video games and what you had for lunch that day.
Yeah.
Why do you think that we brought you up here?
Because the car I own was seen picking up a girl that's missing.
And you've been at the U of I for how long?
3 years, 2 years.
And that you know what we do? I work in the detectives bureau at the U of I, and you know what we have access to? Cameras. Do you think that we're not going to track a vehicle all over campus? We control kiosks to bus stops. We can look in buses. We can look in every building out on the streets. And you're telling me that I didn't see you driving your car on Goodwin. That I didn't see you driving down Wright Street and turning on right in front of parking where everybody pays their tickets and driving down University to Goodwin and heading south. And then you see her standing on that corner in that shade tree, didn't you? That's where you first saw her. And then you turned. You turned on Clark. And we still have cameras.
I've seen the videos. I didn't see me.
You've seen what we've allowed you to see.
Can I see this stuff that you're talking about?
Do you think that we brought you up here to show you video? We want to understand why you did it.
Yeah.
We want to understand why you stopped her to pick her up. Was it to give her a ride? Are you afraid to tell us that you gave her a ride? Maybe you wanted to make a couple bucks as an Uber driver, and she told you, I had to go sign a lease at 1 North, and you're like, oh, I know where that's at. I'll drop you off. If you're afraid to tell us that you gave her a ride someplace, we can work with you there. But I know that you picked her up. I know you did. I saw you in your shirt, arms fully extended.
Maybe I'm getting my days mixed up then.
Okay.
I thought I drove around on Saturday. I did pick a girl up. I don't remember where.
Okay.
I saw her picture. I don't think it was her, though.
Do you remember the girl's name that you picked up?
No, she was talking very broken English.
Okay. Tell us about what happened. What time of day was that?
Early afternoon. I don't really remember.
Okay.
I was just driving around. I saw a girl, and she was very distressed.
Okay.
So I stopped my car and looked at her. Okay. I asked her if she needed help. I talked to her for a little bit, not how much.
What was her ethnicity? You said she had trouble speaking English.
She was Asian.
She was Asian.
She was Asian.
Okay. What do you think? How old do you think she was? Do you think she was a grad student, undergrad?
Was she somebody? My guess was about 20.
Okay.
My guess was about 20. Her hair length ish. Kind of weird. I have trouble telling Asian people apart from one another. Sorry.
Well, you would remember very specific, though, because when you pulled up to her, you rolled your window down, and she leaned into your car, so you were looking right at her face. And what did she have on her face? What did she have on her head? You were looking right at her.
You don't remember? Things like that. No, I mean, I taught many, many semesters here, and a lot of the students were Asian.
Okay, was she wearing glasses? Did she have a ball cap on?
She might have been wearing glasses. I don't remember that. So.
What did she tell you whenever you rolled down the window and you were chatting with her? You said she looked distressed.
That's when I stopped.
Do you remember specifically what she said to you?
I asked her if something was wrong.
What'd she say to that?
She said, "I'm late. I need to get somewhere," or something like this. I was not exactly out of it, but just kind of like, "Oh, I'm going to help this random person." So, kind of in a weird mood in the first place.
So she said she was running late for something.
Yeah, and I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, you need a ride?" Because again, I was just driving around.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did she say where she was trying to get to? You mentioned the showing the phone with the mask.
She said she had a meeting with her professor.
According to Bren, the woman had attempted to show him where she needed to go on the map on her phone, but when he took a wrong turn, she began to panic, so he let her out of his car just a few blocks away.
I gave her a short ride, a couple blocks.
Okay.
She freaked out and got out.
Okay.
And that's all it was.
Was this when you got on the north side of the railroad tracks on Goodwin? When you went across the university and you drove on north? Let her out by the hospital or by the railroad tracks? Or where did you let her out at?
I don't really remember specifics.
Was it close to where you picked her up?
Yeah, it was relatively close. It was in a residential area.
Okay.
So I'd never really been over there before. I have no reason to.
Okay.
I mean,
when you say she freaked out, what did she do? Did she start throwing things at you? Did she scratch you? It looks like you have a scratch on your right bicep there.
I scratch myself in my sleep. That's from me.
Okay.
So
she just freaked out. So she's sitting in the front passenger seat of your vehicle? Okay. Has anybody else sat in that front passenger seat? Since she got out of the car?
Probably. Okay. Not with me, but with my wife, probably. I mean.
So other than your wife, who else sat in the front passenger seat with you that you know?
Maybe a guy she's hanging out with.
Your wife?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't.
So you said you kicked her out of the car in a residential neighborhood.
She got out of the car. I didn't.
Oh, she got out of the car?
She wanted to get out. Like, that's why I let her out.
Okay, she was freaking out.
Yeah.
Okay. And she was saying things that you didn't understand.
Because you... She thought you took a wrong turn.
Yeah, and something was up. I don't know. Something like that. So, yeah. I mean, she tried to open the door, but again, it was locked because my car auto locks. Obviously wanted to get out. I'm not going to keep someone I barely know in my car who doesn't want to be in there. I don't know the girl. Circle her up. That was the last I saw her.
After the officer said that he knew that he was lying, Brent decided that it was time to stop responding to the questions.
So where did you drop her off at?
Where did you take her, Brent? We need to find Ying Ying.
tonight.
I think it's time that I stop answering questions. I know the typical advice is to get a lawyer before you answer anything, and I think I've tried to help enough.
It was noticed during the interview that Brent was trembling and appeared to be breaking out in hives. As this interview was underway, investigators spoke with Brent's wife, who consented to a search and seizure of items from the residence, which included Brent's cell phone. Investigators then obtained a federal search warrant for the phone, and they discovered that in April, Brent had visited the website FetLife, and on this website, he had visited a forum called Abductions 101. He read a number of posts, including ones that were titled Perfect Abduction Fantasy and Planning a Kidnapping. FetLife described itself as, quote, the social network for the BDSM, fetish, and kinky community, end quote, and stressed in their online policy that it is a place for consenting adults to trade advice and images of themselves and to arrange to meet. Earlier in the year, FetLife had prohibited hundreds of fetish categories after it was cited in several criminal cases. They wanted to reduce legal liability and risks to the wider community. The search of Brent's car uncovered that the passenger's door appeared to have been scrupulously cleaned, more so than the rest of the car. Investigators said that it was, quote, indicative of an attempt to conceal or destroy evidence, end quote. Is there something interfering with your happiness, or are you struggling mentally? If so, don't suffer in silence. BetterHelp Online Counseling is there to help you. They are an online professional counseling service with 3,000 licensed therapists available to anybody, no matter where you're from. Sometimes, admitting that you need help can be daunting, but with BetterHelp, you can get help at your own time and at your own pace. They have professionals specializing in a variety of fields, from depression and anxiety to family conflicts and sleeping issues. Rest assured that whatever you share is completely confidential and you can contact them via text, chat, phone and video. Best of all, it's a truly affordable option. Morbidology listeners get 10% off your first month with the discount code Morbidology. So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/morbidology. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you'll love. That's betterhelp.com/morbidology. Pandia Health is helping women all across the United States take control of their reproductive health. Pandia Health, which is the only woman-founded, woman-led, doctor-founded and led company in birth control delivery, is on a mission to make women's lives easier by bringing our birth control directly to our front doors. Skip the monthly trip to the pharmacy and never fear running out of birth control again with Pandia Health. If you have an active prescription and insurance to cover medications, Pandia Health will send your birth control out for free, along with some amazing goodies, such as Hi-Chew, chocolate, tea and more. If you need a doctor consultation to change pills or birth control methods, or just don't have an active prescription, for just $28 a year, you can have access to Pandia Health's doctors, saving you a trip to the pharmacy. Enter code Morbidology for $5 off a doctor consultation if needed. Pandia Health is about care, conscience and confidentiality, and I'm so pleased that they've sponsored this episode. So head on over to pandiahealth.com, that is pandiahealth.com, and sign up today. The link is in the description. Following Brent's arrest, it was discovered that he had attended the earlier gathering to raise awareness to Ying Ying's disappearance. A resident of his apartment block said that she wasn't surprised to hear of the arrest. Alyssa Patterson said that Brent had always creeped her out. Quote, he is really quiet, it's creepy how he walked, how he held himself, end quote, she said. Another man who was part of an early morning workout group with Brent agreed. For the past few years, a group had met almost daily at 5 a.m. at the refinery in Champaign. John Bowman said that the group were chatty and friendly and had developed a bond after all of those years, but said that Brent would come along, work out, but not speak to anybody. While that in itself isn't necessarily strange. He could have been extremely introverted or shy. It was the first glimpse into the type of character that Brent was. However, there were also several people who would counteract this description and describe Brent as a good student, friendly, and chatty. In early July, Brent appeared in court. During the hearing, he only spoke to confirm that he understood his rights. His defense lawyer, Evan Bruno, urged the public not to jump to conclusions, stating, quote, "There's a long road ahead. I encourage everybody to be patient, to keep an open mind, and wait until the evidence comes in," end quote. During the hearing, it was revealed that the surveillance had captured Brent talking about the abduction to his girlfriend, Tara Bullis, during the community gathering for Ying Ying. He was captured explaining to her the characteristics of an ideal victim and pointing out several women in the crowd that would constitute as his ideal victim. Furthermore, the audio also captured Brent describing how Ying Ying, quote, "fought and resisted," end quote, when he brought her back to his apartment. It was this quote in particular that made investigators theorize that Ying Ying was no longer alive. U.S. Magistrate Eric Long ordered Brent to be held without bond in the kidnapping of Ying Ying. Outside of the court, hundreds gathered, and many were chanting, "Justice for Ying Ying." The abduction of Ying Ying was more than worrisome to students and their families. An abduction in broad daylight is a bold act. The University of Illinois addressed the security concerns and said that they already had more than 1,600 security cameras installed throughout the campus. However, many of these cameras were outdated, and they announced that they would be updating them or replacing them. While a CCTV camera was instrumental in capturing Ying Ying's abduction, it was an outdated camera and the footage was grainy at best. Police said that if the camera were of better quality, they could have captured both the license plate and a clear picture of Brent, meaning that the arrest would have come sooner. On the 12th of July, Brent was indicted on a charge of kidnapping by a grand jury. Ying Ying's family appealed to the community for help in finding Ying Ying dead or alive and announced an increase in the reward fund from $40,000 to $50,000. Quote, "We know Ying Ying wants to be with us, and we will not leave the United States without her," end quote, said Xiao Ling. The family also thanked everybody, including the public, the police, the FBI, attorneys, and Crime Stoppers, for their assistance so far in the search and the investigation. Quote, "But our number one priority is to find Ying Ying, and for that, we need your help. If you have any information that might help investigators find Ying Ying, please help us by sharing it anonymously with Crime Stoppers," end quote. At the time, the $50,000 reward was the largest ever reward in Crime Stoppers history and reflective just how imperative it was for information. On the 20th of July, Brent was back in court where he pleaded not guilty to the kidnapping of Ying Ying. He told Judge Eric Long that he was aware of the charges should he be proven guilty and the possibility of being awarded a life sentence if convicted, since kidnapping is a federal crime. Ying Ying's family were horrified that Brent had pleaded not guilty. Quote, "They feel like, how dare he plead not guilty," end quote, said the family's lawyer, Zaidong Wang. However, the family didn't fully understand the judicial process in the United States, and their lawyer informed them that it would be a long and winding process. By this point, Ying Ying's mother, Lai Feng Yi, had travelled from China to the United States to assist in the search for her daughter. In the early days of the investigation, Ying Ying's diary was recovered from her apartment. It recorded her last thoughts. A replica was put together by the University of Illinois and handed to Ying Ying's parents. The purpose was to give her family insight into her heart and mind before her disappearance, hoping that it would give them a little bit of comfort. The final entry poignantly read, quote, "Life is too short to be ordinary," end quote. In early September, Brent's defense team from Bruno Law Offices quit because Brent and his family couldn't afford to pay them any longer. Meanwhile, a candlelit vigil was held to mark 100 days since Ying Ying was last seen. In Chinese culture, 100 days after a tragedy is a day for family and friends to pay tribute, and they did this for Ying Ying. The following month, a grand jury returned a superseding indictment against Brent, accusing him of kidnapping, resulting in death. The indictment also accused Brent of lying to federal authorities. If convicted, Brent could face either the death penalty or a mandatory life sentence. According to the indictment, Brent intentionally killed Yingying in a particularly cruel or depraved manner in that it involved torture or serious physical abuse, and that he did so after substantial planning and premeditation. The new indictment made it pretty clear that Yingying wasn't alive. In the aftermath, Yingying's family released a statement which read, quote, "First, we are sorrowful and grieved after we learned that the FBI and the prosecutors have acquired more and stronger evidence to show that Yingying has left us. Second, we appreciate and are grateful for the work that the police and the prosecutors have done. We hope that the suspect will receive the punishment he deserves soon. Lastly, and also our greatest wish, is still to find Yingying as soon as possible so that we can bring her home," end quote. Since Yingying had vanished, her father, Rong Gao, had a routine wherein he would go to her apartment and just hope that she would show up. Quote, "It brings peace and comfort to my heart," end quote, he explained. Days later, Brent was in court where he pleaded not guilty to the charge of kidnapping resulting in death. Yingying's mother, Lai Feng, was so overcome with emotions when she saw Brent in court for the very first time that she burst into tears and had to be escorted out. Following Brent's plea, his new public defenders asked for more time to prepare for trial. The request was denied and the trial was scheduled for the 27th of February 2018. The government now had to decide whether they would be seeking the death penalty. Illinois had abolished capital punishment, but Brent's case was a rare instance of the U.S. Department of Justice seeking the death penalty in a state that does not have the death penalty. They drew on the U.S. law that allowed executions by federal authorities for exceptional crimes. A lot of people worried about this, stating that they feared that it was the start of a new trend under President Donald Trump, who is bluntly pro-death penalty. After the plea, Yingying's parents went to her apartment one last time before they reluctantly travelled back to China. They had wanted to stay in the United States until Yingying's body was found, but Lai Feng was in fragile health and there was just no way of knowing how long they would have to stay in the US. Quote, "We don't know where she is and I don't know how to spend the rest of my life without my daughter. I can't really sleep well at night. I often dream of my daughter and she's right there with me. I want to ask the mother of the suspect, please talk to her son and ask him what he did to my daughter. Where is she now? I want to know the answer," end quote, said Lai Feng. The family said they intended on returning to the United States when there was a milestone in the case. Finally, in January, some more information about the case came to light. As it turned out, Brent's girlfriend, Tara, was the one who secretly recorded the conversation between her and Brent wherein he spoke about kidnapping Yingying. She had been in contact with the FBI and agreed to the secret recording. With the trial fast approaching, Brent's defense team had attempted to get the recording excluded as evidence, as they claimed that it was improperly obtained. Towards the end of the month, the prosecution announced that they would be seeking the death penalty for Brent. They also made a new allegation that Brent had once choked and sexually assaulted somebody else in the past. The woman was identified only as MD and the assault allegedly occurred in central Illinois in 2013. The filing also said that Brent once expressed his aspiration, quote, "to be known as a killer," end quote. Following the revelation that the prosecution would be seeking the death penalty, Brent's lawyers requested once again for the trial to be delayed. It was subsequently pushed back to mid-2019. The trial was also moved from Urbana to Peoria. The one-year anniversary of Yingying's disappearance came in June of 2018. Emotions flowed as around 50 people gathered at the Illinois Union to commemorate the life of Yingying and hope for resolution. Quote, "We all know there are bad people in the world, but I believe the majority of people are good. Yingying was certainly one of the good people, but she had the misfortune of coming in contact with one of the bad people, end quote, said University of Illinois Police Chief Matt Merrick, who had put in countless hours in the investigation. The memorial included a heartfelt video depicting photographs of Yingying, as well as messages from her friends and family. Shortly before Brent's trial began, it was revealed that his defense team would be arguing that he had a severe mental illness on the spectrum of schizophrenia in a bid to avoid the death penalty. However, shortly thereafter, it was announced that Brent decided to formally withdraw his mental health defense notice. No reason was given. Yingying's family arrived back in the United States towards the end of May of 2019, and the jury was picked on the 11th of June. It consisted of 7 men and 5 women, as well as 4 men and 2 women who were selected as alternate jurors. The trial began the following day, and during opening statements, Brent's defense lawyer, George Tassif, made the startling claim that Brent had kidnapped and murdered Yingying. He announced that the crux of the defense's argument would be to save him from the death penalty. He painted Brent as a man struggling with a perfect storm of substance abuse, a failing marriage, and academic problems. It was evident that he was attempting to generate enough sympathy that the jury would save Brent's life. U.S. Attorney Eugene Miller laid out the details of the brutal crime during his opening statement. He described how Brent had abducted Yingying and forced her into his apartment. Here, he raped, choked, and stabbed Yingying in his bedroom before beating her with a baseball bat. When Brent realized that Yingying was still alive, he decapitated her. He also described that Brent had bragged to Tara that Yingying was his 13th victim and that he was a serial killer. According to the prosecution, Brent had pretended to be a police officer and took advantage of Yingying's small stature and lack of English fluency while luring her into his car. The opening statements were explosive, and now the defense and prosecution could argue their cases. One of the first pieces of evidence to be presented was the secret recording Tara had made of Brent. While before now, not much information about the tape had been released, other than he had confessed to kidnapping Yingying. However, now that it was played during court, it could be heard that Brent also described how hard Yingying attempted to fight for her life in his apartment. He had arrived at the gathering for Yingying and was drinking alcohol out of a water bottle. He commented that there was a massive turnout and said that they were all there, quote, for me, end quote. Tara tried to make Brent open up about Yingying so she could hand over the recording to the FBI.
You know what you're doing. I cut her doors off and just started doing stuff to her and I choked her. It's been 10 minutes. I carried her into my bathroom with a bat that I hit her on the head as hard as I could. And it broke her head open. So I took her head open.
Brent described how he removed Yingying's clothes and started to sexually abuse her. When she fought back, he choked her for around 10 minutes, but she wouldn't die. He described how he placed her in the bathtub and hit her over the head with a baseball bat as hard as possible. Yingying still wasn't dead, so he grabbed a knife and then stabbed her in the neck. But once he stabbed her, Yingying attempted to grab the knife. Quote, I chopped her head off. That was the end of it, end quote, he said. Brent referred to murdering Yingying as his legacy and bragged that he was, quote, the most successful person who has done this in the past 30 years. I really am, end quote. Tara testified that she cared about Brent, but also cared about the fact that a young woman was missing. Quote, I was emotionally attached to this person and wanted to know if he had done anything or not, end quote, she said. It was also revealed that Brent had bragged to Tara that he had killed 13 people, although investigators found no such evidence.
He's just the only person that has produced evidence that leads back. I was 19.
There's a number that will be enough.
No. My legacy.
According to Brent's defense lawyer, Elizabeth Pollock, that showed the brand statements into the wire cannot be trusted. Although that made little sense considering the fact that she'd already confessed that Brent had murdered Ying Ying. FBI agent Joel Smith testified about the exhaustive search for Ying Ying. He described how at one point during the search, they had searched through garbage at Centennial Park, an isolated area near Olympian Road and Interstate 57, and also the Murdoch Mine, after Brent's phone pinged to towers in the area. Nevertheless, they kept coming up empty. Quote, "We were doing everything we could to try to determine where Ying Ying was," end quote, he testified. Evidence found on Brent's phone would be presented. On the 8th of June, Brent had Googled OxyClean and laundry and shortly afterwards had Googled how iPhone tracking works. 5 days later, he visited the University of Illinois Police website on the search for Ying Ying and would repeatedly visit the site over the forthcoming days, as well as numerous other articles about Ying Ying's disappearance. Then on the 20th of June, he searched obstruction of justice and obstruction of justice Illinois penalty. FBI biologist Amanda Baker also testified during the trial about blood evidence found inside Brent's apartment. They had discovered Ying Ying's blood on the baseball bat as well as on Brent's bed. During closing arguments, the defense tried to suggest that alcohol abuse had led Brent down a dark path, one that he couldn't get out of. The defense also said that Brent didn't seek help for his dark thoughts and lost control of his alcohol intake, his schoolwork, and his marriage. The prosecution refuted this, stating, quote, "The defendant is the one responsible. The defendant is the only one responsible," end quote. It took the jury less than 90 minutes before reaching a verdict. Guilty. That wasn't much of a surprise considering Brent's defense had admitted he killed her. The real part of the trial would be the upcoming sentencing phase. Following the verdict, Ying Ying's father, Ron Gao, released a statement, quote, "On behalf of Ying Ying, our beloved daughter, and for my wife, my son, and myself, I thank the jury for this step towards justice. We thank the prosecutors, the University of Illinois Police, and the FBI, who all helped in the investigation and trial of this case. We thank the many people in China, America, and across the world who have reached out to us in friendship to support us. We would like to especially thank the friends who have helped us with our daily living from both Champaign and Peoria, Chinese Association, and churches. We have missed Ying Ying tremendously in the past 2 years. As of today, we could still not imagine how we will live the rest of our lives without her. There is no language that can describe our pain and suffering. We hope and believe that this trial will eventually bring justice to Ying Ying and us. Our wish has always been to find Ying Ying and bring her home. We will not give up," end quote. The sentencing phase was to follow. It was revealed that around 6 months after Brent's arrest, he offered to plead guilty and reveal where Ying Ying's body was, and to plead guilty in return for a life sentence. Ying Ying's family were made aware of the offer, but they were wary that Brent would actually tell the truth. He had lied so much in the past and they were leery. Quote, "There was no promise that Ying Ying's remains would be discovered," end quote, their lawyer said. Following this revelation, the prosecution responded by suggesting that it would never be possible to recover Ying Ying's remains. For the jury to decide whether to sentence Brent to life imprisonment or death depended on the government's aggravating factors and the defense's mitigating factors. The aggravating factors included proof that Brent lacked remorse and obstructed the investigation, that torture and serious harm occurred, and that Brent substantially planned out the murder. The mitigating factors included information about Brent's mental health history and his lack of a criminal record. Prosecutor James Nelson opened the sentencing phase, stating that the crime was heinous and sinister and took months of planning. Arguably, the worst part of the crime, he said, was that Brent made Ying Ying's body disappear. Defense attorney Julie Breen said that a life sentence should suffice for the crime. She described that Brent had struggled with his mental health his whole life. Both the prosecution and the defense called several witnesses. Some of the witnesses included Ying Ying's friends and family, who spoke on how the loss of Ying Ying had impacted them personally. One friend, who was 6 months pregnant when Yingying vanished, described how Yingying was ecstatic about the pregnancy and couldn't wait to have a baby of her own. But now, that had been stolen from her. Quote, "My daughter did not get to wear a wedding dress. I really wanted to be a grandma," end quote, said her mother, Lai Feng, as she wiped tears from her cheeks. Her father, Rong Gao, told the courtroom, quote, "My life without her will not be complete," end quote. The testimony, especially of Yingying's parents, was extremely poignant. At one point, a member of the jury had to leave the courtroom after being overcome with emotion. The defense called on Brent's father, Michael, to testify. On the stand, he said that he still loved his son and said that he couldn't think of him ever being executed because it made him too emotional. During his testimony, it was the first time that Brent had shown any emotion throughout the entire trial. Michael took the chance while on the stand to apologize to Yingying's family. Quote, "I'm his parent. I have to be here. I love him. Nothing's going to stop that, and I have no choice," end quote, he said. The defense attempted to humanize Brent by having a number of his friends and family describe him as a bright and polite child. They also described some of the issues he's faced as a child, including night terrors. They additionally described how Brent had struggled mentally during high school and college and had developed alcohol problems. Apparently, alcoholism had run in the family. Then in 2016, Brent was treated for depression, anxiety, alcohol abuse, and sleep problems. When it came to the mental health issues that Brent allegedly suffered, they didn't touch on it too much since before the trial, Brent had dropped the mental health defense. After deliberating for 2 days, the jury saved Brent's life and sentenced him to life in prison. They were unable to reach a unanimous decision, which meant that they could not sentence him to death. Following the sentence, Judge James Shadid chastised Brent for showing no remorse for the murder. He had been asked whether he wanted to speak during the sentencing phase, but refused. Quote, "Your complete and total lack of remorse was not lost on anyone, and emphasized one more time today when given the opportunity to speak and not subject to any cross-examination, you could have said whatever you wanted to say for as little or as long as you wished. And yet today, 769 days after you took Yingying's life, you could not muster a simple I'm sorry," end quote, said the judge. He described how Brent would live a lonely life in federal prison and, quote, "Maybe, just maybe, he'll pick up a pen and write I'm sorry to Mr. and Mrs. Jong," end quote. The decision crushed Yingying's family, who had hoped for a death sentence. Her father, Rong Gao, pleaded with Brent, quote, "If you have any humanity left in your soul, please end our torment. Please let us bring Yingying home," end quote. Outside of court, Yingying's boyfriend, Xiao Ling, made a statement.
I want to add something. For myself, the result today seemed to tell me that I can kill anyone, and I can kill anyone with all kinds of cruel method I want, and I will not need to die for it. And I'd better take some drugs, some alcohol before I do it, and I'd better act as a loner, and then people will now think I'm dangerous people. So for me, for my own personal opinion, the result today seem to encouraging people to do crime. And me, myself, will never agree with that. But for me, I do appreciate the hard working in this 2 months of the jury, and also the prosecutor, the judge, and all the lawyers, and everyone in the court. I'm very, very grateful to your work. I'm very, very grateful to that.
Following the sentencing, Brent's defense lawyers finally revealed what Brent had done with Yingying's body. Brent had confessed to his defense team that he dismembered Yingying and placed her remains in three separate garbage bags, which he then disposed of in the dumpster outside of his apartment. 3 days later, the dumpster was taken to a landfill in the Danville area where they were compacted at least twice and then taken to a private landfill and spread out over an area of 50 yards wide before being buried under 30 feet of garbage. It was pretty clear that Yingying's body would never be retrieved. Not only was it deeply buried, but it would be completely compressed. Following the revelation, Yingying's family said that it was unlikely that they would ever get to bring their daughter home. Quote, "We have decided to follow the Chinese custom and create a grave site here in America to honor Yingying's memory," end quote, said her father, Rong Gao. They subsequently held a memorial service for Yingying at the First Baptist Church in Savoy. They spoke fondly of Yingying and told stories of her kindness. Yingying was remembered as a brilliant young woman with an easy smile, a kind heart, and big dreams who put others first. Her family thanked everybody who supported the family over the past 2 years and described how much they would miss Yingying. Quote, "We have shown to the world that evil will not win. We have stood together as one," end quote.
As of today, we still could not imagine how we will live the rest of our lives without her. There's no language that can describe our pain and suffering. We hope and believe that this trial will eventually bring justice to Yingying and us.
Yingying Zhong had come to the University of Illinois to follow her dream, a dream that millions of other Chinese academics had made before her, to be able to finally help her family back home. In just weeks, however, Yingying's dream was ripped to pieces. To this very day, Yingying's body has still not been found. It is part of Chinese culture that a falling leaf should return to its roots. But even in death, Brent Christensen denies Yingying's family that simple closure. Not only did Yingying's murder crush her family, but it stole the sense of security from her community. Sometimes, colleges can be so vibrant, diverse, and welcoming that they inadvertently lull students into an exaggerated sense of safety. Yingying's murder was a chilling reminder that evil exists in every community. Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to take a second to say a massive thank you to my new Patreon supporter, Michael Crastens. The support on Patreon really does go such a long way in helping Morbidology continue as a weekly podcast, and I'm eternally grateful. Feel free to check it out if you're interested in supporting the show in return for ad-free and early release episodes, as well as true crime articles and bonus episodes. I'd also like to ask that if you enjoy Morbidology and want to support the show, please consider giving me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening. It truly does help out. Big thanks to everybody who has simply listened to an episode as well. The support is very much appreciated. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. And stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a promo for the amazing true crime podcast, Lady Justice. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.
Hello, my lovelies. My name is Chantelle, and I'm the host over at Lady Justice True Crime. Lady Justice is a weekly podcast that covers fascinating cases, both past and present, from around the UK and Ireland. Some of them are strange, many are unbelievable, all of them are completely unique and are someone's story. So please come join me on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.